Good morning, Boker Tov. Welcome back to Parsha Perspectives for today. I want to thank, as always, our very generous series sponsor for the year, Becky and Avi Katz and family, in memory of David Grossman, sponsored the Parsha series, Le'ilui Nishmas, David Ben Menachem Manush. This morning's Parsha series is also sponsored by Gloria and Al Fine and Evelyn Stanley Weiss, in commemoration of the Yahrzeit of Ruth Weiss, Neshama Shadav and Aliyah, and by Howard Stricker, in memory of his mother, Chava Bas Moshe, whose Neshama as well should have an Aliyah. This is our last year for a few weeks. We're going to be taking a break for a few weeks. So please pay attention to when we will resume in person in a few weeks from now. As always, I remind you, we have many years of Parsha classes online. You can listen to. There are also plenty of other people who give much better Parsha classes online. So the fact that I will be away does not mean that you are exempt from studying the Parsha. You still have a responsibility to delve deeply into the Parsha. So you can still do it together with me from years past or with others, but take advantage of those opportunities. Okay, this week, we have the privilege of beginning the fifth and final book of the Torah, the book of Devarim. Page 938 in the Art Scroll Stone Chumash. Eila ha-Devarim asher diber Moshe el kol Yisrael be'evar Yardein. These are the words that Moshe spoke to the Jewish people. Be'evar Yardein ba'midbar in the desert ba'arava mosuf. Here the Torah does something somewhat unusual, and it gives us the exact coordinates. It plots exactly where they were when Moshe begins this monologue. Moshe begins to deliver this soliloquy, this monologue. The Torah tells us exactly where they are standing, where Moshe is. This is the final day of his life, and he's going to review all of Jewish history until this point. And he's going to use it as a prism, as a filter through which to communicate where they've gone wrong, what they can do better, give a charge and a mission of where they can go right, who they're meant to be, and how to become those people. The Medrash already notes that this Moshe, who when Hashem, 40 years earlier, recruited him and said, Moshe, I want you to be my mouthpiece, I want you to be my spokesperson. Moshe, I want you to be my ambassador, my agent, I want you to represent me. He recruits Moshe, solicits Moshe to be the leader, and what does Moshe do? What does he say? Lo ish tevarim anochi. I'm not a good speaker. I'm not an orator. I'm not eloquent. I struggle to articulate thoughts. I'm not your man. Lo ish dvarim anochi. 7 days of negotiation. 7 day recruitment. 7 days back and forth and back and forth. The Medrash says that Hashem in fact didn't let Moshe into the land. And Moshe davened v'eschanan for all those days corresponding with the days that Hashem had to plead, so to say, and push and cajole Moshe to accept the responsibility. But Moshe, he hesitated, he demurred, lo ish devarim anochi. I don't speak well. I'm not your man. So Hashem said, no problem. That's why you have a brother. And your brother will be the mouthpiece. Your brother will speak for the two of you. But I need your leadership. I need your presence. I need your stature. I need who you are. Lo ish devarim anochi. Says the Medrash, though this lo ish devarim anochi, this individual who couldn't find his words, Eila hadvarim asher diber Moshe. We have an entire book, a fifth of the Torah, are the words and the speech of the Moshe who couldn't find his words. Somebody found his power of speech. Lo ish dvarim anochi, eile hadvarim asher diber Moshe. What happened? What changed? Speech therapy? What changed? Where did he find this ability? What was the difference between when he responded, lo ish dvarim anochi, and now? What did he get in between? Torah HaKadosha. Some suggest the Torah gives us a vocabulary. The Torah is a language. The Torah gives us the power of communication. The Torah gives us our ability to speak. You know, somebody who is, not that Moshe was, chas v'shalom, insecure, but somebody who's not confident, struggles to speak. When do I speak up and what do I say? And who am I to speak? And how do I know I'm right? When a person has Torah, when you know that you speak not for God, in the name of Hashem, when we're tapping into, when we are spreading the truth of Torah, then Torah tells us without, we don't have to be apologetic, and we don't have to be defensive, we don't have to be in retreat. The Torah gives us a language. Torah tells us while the world is struggling on what to believe. It's the Torah view on, fill in the blank. The Torah view on, God, free will, abortion, gender, whatever the issue is, one who ordinarily doesn't know what to say, Torah tells us, here's our viewpoint, here's what we believe. It's nuanced. It's complicated. It's multifaceted. Torah is not simple, and don't oversimplify it. However, the Torah is the vocabulary, it's the language. This lo ish devarim anochi, the same Moshe who didn't know how to speak, found his power of speech. Okay, we got a lot to say on this opening pasuk that probably doesn't surprise you. We begin with an altar of Kelm. Rashi says on the words, where are they? What are the coordinates here? They are Be'eva HaYarden, the other side of the Yarden. Bamidbar, they're in the desert. Barava, they're in the wilderness, the Arava. Mol Suf, they're opposite. Bein Paran, Bein Tofa, V'Lavan, V'Chatzeros, V'Di Zahav. Says Rashi, Hayalachem l'lmo b'masha asisa b'chatzeros, Di Zahav al Egel she'asu, Biglal Rov Zahav. Rashi here first of all tells us that these are rebuke. There are messages. Moshe is communicating lessons for them to have learned, but he is couching it. He's hiding it. It's nuanced. It's subtle because he's trying to preserve their dignity and self-respect, their honor. He doesn't want to come out, lash out. He doesn't want to embarrass or humiliate. He doesn't want to provoke a sense of shame. So he embeds the message within the locations and he reminds them subtly with nuance. You remember when we were there? Remember what happened there? And remember when we were there? You remember how you misbehaved and you complained over there? And then we traveled and camped over there? You remember yet again how you... He doesn't say it outright. He protects the dignity of the people. Says Rashi, Shein divrei tochachos umanakan kol ha-makom ha-sheikh yisul lufnei ha-makom bahem. We'll come back to that Rashi in a moment. Lefichach sasam ha-sadvar v'izkirim b'remez kvodim she-yisrael. To preserve the dignity, we learn a big lesson. That when we have to rebuke, when we have to give constructive criticism or feedback to another, don't do it full force. We don't have to do it in an explicit, strong, attacking way. We can do it with subtlety and with nuance. We can do it in a way that preserves the other person's dignity and respect. But why does he invoke these two places? Why does he invoke Chatzeros v'di Zahav? What happened to Chatzeros? Korach, the rebellion of Korach, di Zahav, says Rashi, Hochichan ala egel she'asu b'shvil rov Zahav shehaya lahem. What happened? Di Zahav is a reference to Di Zahav. What happened there? The Egel. The Cheta Egel. And what precipitated, what caused, what brought about the terrible, poor judgment of the Cheta Egel when they miscalculated and they didn't know when Moshe was going to return and they panicked. And in their panic, they built an Egel, an idol. Why? What enabled them to do that? What commodity did they have? Gold. They had plenty of gold. If they had no gold, they had no mineral, no expensive jewels, they wouldn't have been able to build an egel. So what enabled and allowed the Cheta Egel, Di Zahav, was that gold. So, says the Altar of Kelm, Rom Nifla Shikra Tochocha Eina L'Chit Atzmo. You see that Moshe, the hidden subtle rebuke he was giving, was not for the Cheta Egel. Was not for the Cheta Egel. Cheta Egel, you abandoned God. Cheated on God, the wedding night, infidelity, you build and you worship an idol. But that's not what Moshe is holding them accountable for. That's not what Moshe is rebuking them for. Rather, Moshe says, So said the Altar of Kelm, Einani mevakish michem lishtaper, ani mevakish shetishtanu. Has it here in the Yiddish, but I'm not going to try to read it that way. He says, I'm not asking you to repair, I'm asking you to change. See, the Jewish people are held accountable here not for the mistake, but what led up to it. If we're not careful with our circumstance, our surrounding, if we're not careful with our priorities and our focus, if we're not careful with what we pursue and where we have our drive, then the fact that we later give in or succumb to that temptation, it's too late. It's too late. We're human, and we have human failure. So what we're held accountable for is di zahav ala egel sha'asu bigla rov zahav. In a material society with an emphasis and a focus on wealth, if you accumulate and you amass and you have too much and you're haughty and ostentatious and you show, then it's going to lead to a cheta egel. So what Moshe Rabbeinu here is alluding to in the subtle, nuanced rebuke he's giving is not the actual chet, but what led to it. Is what led to it. Not the symptom, so to say, but the illness itself. That's what he's calling them out. That's what he's calling them out for. Revolba also has a comment. The Volbe, the great Mashkiach, says here, Ela Advarim, where he's admonishing them. D Zahav means more D. Where does the word D come from? D means from the word die. What is die? Enough. Genug. Die. Enough. When you have enough. Enough wealth. So what was he alluding to, Moshe? D Zahav. You didn't know how to say die. You didn't know how to say enough. One of Hashem's names, we've spoken about this before, Shin Dalad Yud Sha'amar La Olam Odai, that Hashem looked at the world and he said, Genug, could always do better, could always do more. But Hashem had that capacity and introduced and modeled for us the ability to look and to say, Genug, die. It's enough. Sha'amar La Olam Odai. We invoke that name of Hashem when we are reminding ourselves about the importance and that character trait of, whether it's Mistapik B'muat, or the ability to simply say, die. That's what we sing on Pesach night. Dayenu, die, dayenu. What are we singing? You know what freedom is? Freedom is the ability to say, genug, it's enough. The person who has this insatiable appetite for more, who can never say enough, is not in fact free. You're enslaved to whatever it is you're pursuing. More friends, more followers, more fame, more money. Whatever it is that you want more of, whatever you collect in life, and you can never say it's enough, whatever you feel and want more of, you are a slave to, subjugated to. So what do we do on Seder night? What do we sing? A bizarre song saying each of these things would have been enough when they wouldn't have, right? Now we're not going to take the time. It's not Pesach. But we sing Dayenu, die, it's enough. So Rashi tells us, Rav Volbe says, Di Zahav, embedded in the name is the Musar. You know where your failure, you know what led to the Chayta Egel? Di Zahav, you didn't have the ability to say, Dai Zahav. You didn't say, it's enough. Rashi writes that Moshe told Hashem, in effect, caused the sin of the golden calf by giving so much wealth. The Medrash expands on this and gives us the example of a king who has a son, who gives his son food and drink and adorns him and puts a big wallet with money around his neck and puts him at the door of the Beis Zona. And what can you expect from that son? You set him up for failure. You give him wealth, spray him with cologne, slick back his hair, and put him outside a house of ill repute. And what do you think? That young adolescent son is not going to act on it? So how could Bnei Yisrael be blamed for the Chayta Egel? So the answer is, says Rav Volbe, this is an Ishiri Chomesh and Dvarim, although Bnei Yisrael were placed in a difficult situation, we always have the ability to overcome that test. So in telling us that their wealth caused their sin, Chazal are telling us that the best way to overcome the test is not wait till the moment we're in it. This is like the Altar of Kelm, a very similar idea. But to understand, what are the triggers? What are our triggers? What will lead us to cross that boundary or line? Yeah, if you're outside the Beis Zona, looking good, smelling good, with money to spend, you're going to cross a boundary, a line. If you put yourself in a circumstance, you know what triggers you, you know when you're weak and vulnerable, and then you're going to find yourself later in a place that you regret. So the lesson that we have to learn is, don't put ourselves in that circumstance. Don't place yourself with that device or with that technology. Don't go shopping and buy that food while you're hungry that you claim you don't want to eat, and yet you line the pantry of your home with. Don't surround yourself with the people who bring out the worst in you, and you'll find you say and share and talk about things that later make you feel worse about yourself, not better, that bring out the worst of you, not the best of you. Don't ever say, I won't be effective. We need to know, not in that moment of the Nisayon, the test, but before we get there to begin with, says Rav Volbe, that's what you learn from here, and the Di Zahav, die. We have to know what is enough. And when we don't know where to place that boundary and that border of what's enough, and we enable ourselves to be triggered, then we will come to ultimately violate it. There's a beautiful teaching of Rav Nachman. Why does the Torah tell us all these places? So Rashi, we read this Rashi, that each of these places is an allusion, a subtle nuanced rebuke. There this happened, and the other place the other thing happened. Let's go on a journey, a trip down memory lane, not a slideshow of where we had our vacations, the pictures, but what the mistakes were there and how we could have been better. V'adayin nishal sa sha'ila. Im ha'kavani lochiach es b'nei Yisrael ha'chata'ayim, ma ha'kesher shel osam mekomos l'chata'ayim? Why do we have to bring up the places? Efshel l'havin ha'sanyin l'fi divrei Rav Nachman. So this beautiful sefer of Nachman on the parsha, teachings of Rav Nachman connected to the parsha, quotes here from the Likutei Mu'aran, Chelek Beis Simon Aleph, I efshar ladon shum adam. We spoke about a Shavasa Matamas. You could go watch the video or listen online. We spoke about going from hypercritical to hypercomplimentary. To stop being a people who intuitively or instinctively turn to criticism, to judgment, to marginalizing, to dismissing, to pushing other people away. We're not entitled, and who are we, and what right do we have? The differences and the distance we place between ourselves and others, and how we sit so haughtily and arrogantly in judgment of others. And why is that a problem? We mentioned then, we didn't really have a chance to go into it, it was at the end, the Mishnah in the second parak of Avos, that tells us, Al-Tadon es chavercha, ad shetegeim lekomo. Don't judge your friend until you're in his or her place. So here's the thing. Could you ever be in someone else's place? By definition, you can't. Why not? Because you look different. You have a different IQ, artistic ability, athletic ability. You have different parents, a different socioeconomic status. You're born in a different day, a different time. Every one of us is different than another. No two people are nearly the same. So how could you talk about Makomo? How do you know what it's like to walk in his or her shoes? We don't have the faintest clue what somebody is struggling with or what someone is going through. We don't begin to understand what it is to live life through their perspective. I'll just give you one example. One example. Have you ever had a toothache? Have you ever had a stomach ache? Have you ever had a chronic pain which was debilitating and you are irritable and obnoxious and no one would want to be around you because you were in such pain that it just overtook you? Have you ever had such a pain? Hopefully it lasted a day. You got to a dentist. Hopefully it was a couple days till the virus cleared up. And then you went back to being your joyful, cheerful, pleasant self. But for that day or two, you were a misery to be around. And while others were upset at you for your behavior, you said, do you have any idea what pain I'm in? Do you understand how much this hurts? Do you understand how it won't go away? Do you understand how it's in the background all the time? Do you understand how I can't fall asleep and I can't eat and I can't concentrate? And you expected and wanted the world to have sympathy and understand and give you space to live with that pain. Well, do you know there are people who live with chronic pain every day their entire lives? Do you know there are people who live with chronic pain that doesn't go away? So you might see them as that grumpy, grouchy person. You might sit in judgment of them. Why can't they be happy with what they have? Why are they always in such a bad mood? Why is that person always react that way? Why are they always so stuck? Do you have any idea the chronic pain? This physical chronic pain, we'll talk about, Mirtz Hashem will be in Yerushalayim. So we won't. But if we're going to read Eicha, this Motzei Shabbos, sitting on the floor, we'll talk about before and people who are in spiritual chronic pain and how lonely that feels. If you have no idea what that's like to be in physical, emotional, or spiritual chronic pain, how dare you judge another? How dare you judge? We have no idea. That's what the Mishnah says. So essentially, if you can't judge someone until you can be in their place, and you can never be in someone else's place, what is the Mishnah telling us? You can't judge. Stop judging. And if you're going to judge, because we spoke about people naturally judge, by the way, our Parsha speaks to judges, you can't judge till both people are in the room, you have to hear both sides, don't be afraid of judging, you can't be afraid of the litigants. Torah in our Parsha, when it speaks about the rules of judges, is talking to every one of us, because we are, by default, by definition, by design, we are always in judgment. We need to. We judge our circumstance, we judge our surroundings, we have to make judgment calls throughout our day. All the time we make judgments. We're just supposed to condition ourselves to make positive judgments, to judge positively. Be down the kafschus, to see things positively. Positively. So we judge, but condition ourselves to judge favorably. So says Reb Nachman, listen to this teaching, it was worth coming today, it was worth waking up today, just for this teaching of Reb Nachman. Listen to this, Lior, it's amazing. Says Reb Nachman, Al tadin es chavercha ashetagia limekomo. Mekomo means Place. Whose nickname is Place? Who do we refer to as Place? Baruch HaMakom, Baruch Hu. HaMakom Yinachem Eschem. Says Rav Nachman, you know what the Mishnah is telling us? Al Tadon Es Chavercha Ad Shetagia. Don't judge your friend until you become God. Until you're Makomo, until you're God, don't judge anybody. You're perfect. You get everything right. You're never in a bad mood. You're never the grumpy, grouchy guy. You make every call correct. You're God. Until you're God, some people will say, well, I'm already God. But a person who's honest with himself knows they're not. Until you're God, don't sit in judgment of anybody else. Oh, is that a geschmack explanation of this Mishnah? Al tadon es chavercha ad shetagia l'makomo, not his place, until you get makomo, his place. Until you're God, until you're infinite and omnipotent, until you're all-knowing, until you know and see everything, until you can really know the truth, you cannot judge anybody else. L'chol adam yesh makom shebohu nimtza. Lo rak makom fizi, elegam makom ruchni v'nafshi. Every person has a place. Every person is in a place. We even use that in the vernacular. I'm not in a good place. Sometimes a person will say, I'm not in a good place. You say, what do you mean? 7900 Montoya Circle? It's not a good place? So it's not the address. It's not your coordinates. When you say I'm not in a good place, you don't mean where I'm standing right now. I'm not in a good place means psychologically, mentality. I'm not in a good place. Every person has a place. Shenik v'lefi nisivos chayav. L'adam yesh tchunos molados chinuch shekibel yachasim b'nei mishpachto hachevra sovevez oso. Our place is defined and influenced. Our place is informed and inspired by the family we're born into, by our genetics, by our health, by our everything. Kol eila polam ha-matzvim es ish Yusuf nit Yosef. Tamid yesh l'adam b'chira chavshus. But in that place, the place predetermines so much for us. Our place, not only our physical, our spiritual and our emotional coordinates, predetermines and sets us on such a trajectory in life in so many ways. And yet, in that place, we have so much free will. Yet in that place, we have free will. And we can make choices and never forfeit it and never stop believing and never despair. No matter your circumstance, no matter your genetics, no matter the model, good or bad, of your parents or ancestors before you, no matter the cards that life has dealt you, you still get to choose how to play them. You can't change the cards, but you could choose how to play them. And you can make any hand a winning hand if you play them right. That choice is still up to us. So says this wonderful Sefer teachings of Rav Nachman in the Parsha. Maybe that's why Moshe Rabbeinu is mentioning all the Mekomos. That's what Rashi meant. He's invoking all of these Mekomos places because what he was saying was, you have a Makom in life. You're in your Makom in life, in your place in life. But you know, and nobody can judge your place until they're in it. Because only God, the Makom, knows your Makom. And yet, even within our Makom, we have free will. We've shared an insight about this before, which I'll remind you of. Who are the biggest casualties in the rebellion of Korach? Here in this opening pasuk, Moshe reminds them of that rebellion of Korach. And who suffered the greatest casualties? Which tribe was it? Not Levi. Korach comes from the tribe of Levi. And Korach led the rebellion, but it wasn't the tribe of Levi that suffered the most casualties. Which tribe was it? Reuven. Shkoyach. Reuven. So Rav Nevin Sal Shlita, Zolzayin Gesundenstark, Rabbi of the Iratika. Rav Nevin Sal in his beautiful Sefer El Chumash says, if you're Reuven, you come upstairs to the Almighty and you say, what? What happened here? Because we lived next door to Korach. So many of my tribe, my family, were taken by Korach's charisma, joined his rebellion, lost their lives, so many widows and orphans in my tribe and in my family. But Hashem, how did I end up next to Korach? Because I wanted that house? Because I negotiated for that deal? Because I went on Zillow and followed it for years until in Boca I found the normal price? How did I end up in that house? Who determined the encampments in the desert? Hashem. It was divinely ordained. Hashem said, you to the west, you to the east, you to the north, you tribe next to this tribe, here's your address, here's where you're going to live, go unpack. So if you're Reuven, you come upstairs and you say, Hashem, what's the deal? Oyla Rasha, Oyla Shechino. Oh, poor unto the wicked person and unto, yeah, but how did I become their neighbor? Hashem, you put me there. Says Rav Nevin Sal, you think in life just because Hashem made that your makom. Sometimes you think Hashem gave me this job, or this family, or this neighbor, or this community, or put my children in this school. So this is just the way it is. I guess it is fatalistic. I guess it is predetermined. I guess that's the way it is. I can let down my guard, and I can forfeit my free will, because if Hashem planted and put me here, that's what's meant to be. Says Rav Nevin Sal, no. If Hashem put us there, it's for a reason. We may never know what it is, but we can't let our guard down. Just because for whatever reason that is our makom, doesn't mean that we don't still have free will, that we don't have autonomy, that we can't make the most of it. And that's what's going on here, says Reb Nachman. Moshe is giving the rebuke by mentioning the places, because Moshe is telling them, every person has a makom in life. What place are you in? Mentally, spiritually, emotionally, physically, what place are you in? But just because you find yourself in that place in life doesn't mean that you can stop trying. Doesn't mean that you don't have free will. Doesn't mean that you can't still make decisions and you can't still determine and you can't still decide where you go from here. One more insight on this opening pasuk and we'll move on. Eila hadvarim asher diber. It's a very clumsy language. Eila hadvarim asher diber. Just say Eila hadvarim or Vaidaber Moshe. What's Eila advarim asher diber? Seems to be somewhat of a clumsy language. The Aruch Chaim HaKadosh explains these words were not just delivered in that place and in that time. They're meant for all of Klal Yisrael, always, wherever. Sefer Dvarim is the ultimate Musar Sefer. Long before we had Orchas Tzadikim or Mesillas HaSharim or Shari Tshuva or Alei Shor or any other Musar Sefer, we should not gloss over or pass over the opportunity. Simply be Mar Besedra, Shnayim Mikra. Sefer Dvarim is the quintessential Musar Sefer. And therefore, it doesn't say, Asher Dibir Moshe al kol B'nai Yisrael, as it normally does. The Torah normally tells us B'nai Yisrael. Why here al kol Yisrael, says the Aruch Chaim HaKadosh? Because Hashem is speaking these words, not just to that generation in that place and at that time. He's saying them to who? To whom? To you and to me. Al kol Yisrael. He's speaking to all of us in all times. So these Dvarim Asher Dibir, it's redundant. It's clumsy. Dvarim asher diber. Same word is being used in this pasuk to mean two separate things. Dvarim, eila hadvarim, what are dvarim? Things, asher diber, that he said. So which is it? Are dvarim things or dvarim words? And the answer is yes. The answer is both. It's a very fascinating etymology that the same word has both meanings. And whenever in Hebrew we find one word having multiple meanings, there's a close connection between the two. And what is that close connection? And how does this relate to the time in which we find ourselves? The 9 days, Bein HaMetzarim, Tisha B'Av, such a sad time and a sad reality of our own making. The answer is, you know what creates things? Words. Dvarim, dibur, creates dvarim. Dibur creates dvarim. And that is the source of the magical term. According to the Oxford Dictionary, the word abracadabra, that magicians proclaim before they do a trick, was first introduced and dates back to... It dates back to, according to the Oxford Dictionary, the 2nd century. But I say it goes back to this pasuk. Eila hadvar masher diber, because some suggest that the word abracadabra is actually abra kedabra. Abra means I will create. Abra, I create. Oh, magician. Abra, I create. Kedabra, through my speech. Abra, I create. Kedabra, when I speak. Abra kedabra. Because we create reality with our words. We create reality with what we say. Our words get someone a job or a shidduch. They can move markets and they can close deals. They can lift spirits and they can restore life. Or just our words could make markets crash. You know, some newscaster says, from an inside source, the Fed is thinking about raising rates. And the market crashes through words. Nothing changed. Nothing happened. No one did anything. But when we are not careful with our words, we can destroy, we can undermine, we can corrupt, we can prevent. You could break up a shidduch. You could cause someone to lose their job. Words can elevate or create, they can destroy and profane. That's what we read last week. When you make a promise, the beginning of Parshas Matos, Torah tells us, we mentioned last week, Lo Yachel, what should you not profane? Dvaro, your dibur. You know why? Because through your dibur, you create davar. Abra kedabra. Abra kedabra. I create through my words. With my words, I create. Yachel yichalel. Don't make chulin. Don't profane. Don't waste those words. Those words create worlds. So the truth is, every one of us is a magician. We're all magicians. But you don't need to learn a trick to be a magician. How are you a magician? Simply with our words. We can create with our words. There's some people we wish we could make disappear with our words, but we can't. But you can create reality with our words. With words, you can make things appear and disappear, like someone's entire portfolio or value. With words, you can abracadabra, you can do magic. The words we use wire and rewire our brains. They create a physical reality. So, Eila hadvarim asher diber. Moshe says, you ready? Buckle up. I got an entire fifth of the Chumash. I've got something to say. This lo ish dvarim anochi says, listen carefully. Eila hadvarim. I've got something to say. And through his words, he creates a reality. Eila hadvarim asher diber. I'm not going to belabor because we've shared before. The Lubavitcher Rebbe Zatzal was very strict about this. About positive language, positive psychology, positive thinking. And that's why the Rebbe insisted. He never used the term deadline. What term did he use? Due date. When you talk about something having a due date, something's going to be born. When you talk about something having a deadline, something's going to die. He was asked to give an endorsement to a hospital in Israel, and he said, only if you call it a Beit Refuah, not a Beit Cholim. If you call it a Beit Cholim, the people lying there feel, why am I here? I'm here because this is a place for sick people. I guess I'm sick. But if you call it a Beit Refuah, they say to themselves, why am I here? I'm here to get better. This is a place that people get better. He didn't call it Kiruv. Kiruv means you're far, and I'm close, and I have to bring you closer to me because I'm right and you're wrong. I've arrived and you're far away. He didn't call it Kiruv instead. And the list goes on and on with the examples that the Rebbe had. Because through, and why was the Rebbe so insistent? Books have been written. Why the Rebbe was so insistent and the examples and stories and letters where he was so makbid on language. It's just language. Who cares? Just terminology that we're using. Who cares? Just the technicality. Who cares? The answer is, Eila hadvar masher diber. The answer is because the Rebbe, who was a magician for neshamas, who was a magician in this world, he understood abracadabra. Abracadabra. With my words, I create. And he did. And we can too, lo yachel dvaro. We bring back davar. That's why later in our parsha, the Torah is going to tell us that Moshe sent the spies. It's going to remind us the story of sending the spies. And Moshe says, if you remember, you recall, spies, I sent you. And why did I send you? I sent you to be able to bring back. You approached me and you said, send spies. We're going to investigate. We will bring back davar. It's a strange thing to bring back. It's a funny souvenir. My miraglim went to Israel and all I got was this lousy davar. What's a davar? V'yashivu osanu davar es aderach ashana leba v'sarim asher nevo aleihem. V'yashivu olan... What? What's a davar? Marzipan ragalach, now we're talking. Bring back marzipan ragalach. What are you talking about? V'yashivu davar. Says Rashi, you know what davar is? Our pasha. You know what they came back with? Be'ezel lashon heim medabrim. Said the Meraglim, we're going to come back. Moshe says, come back and find out. Ezel lashon heim medabrim. What language are they speaking? Okay, why is that important? What language they're speaking? Which dialect of Arabic? What language are they speaking? Who cares? Are their cities fortified? Where are their military positions? What kind of weapons do they have? What do you mean, Ezel lashon heim medabrim? Listen to what the Maharal says, Gur Aryeh, in his commentary on Rashi. He says, Ezel lashon heim medabrim v'im tamar ma'ichbas lehu be'ezel lashon heim medabrim. Who in the world cares what language they're speaking? V'yira ki ayin lashonos heim keneged ayin umos. There are 70 languages corresponding to 70 nations. V'lechol uma nasan lashon v'alashon misyachis ala uma. Every nation, every people have a language that corresponds to them. L'fima shehi nasan l'kodesh baruch hu lashon. Lashon ha-kodesh nasan l'am ha-kodesh. The holy language is given to a holy people. Nimtza ki ha-lashon ha-misyachis l'vimadrega sa-uma. L'ficha chem rotum l'das b'eza lashon ha-medabrim. V'hem yadu kvar inin kol lashon ki osam sheshin lashon in yonam kach. Says the Maharal, the language reflects the people. What language are they speaking? It means so much more than which dialect. But it means not only which language, but what are they speaking about? What do they talk about? What are they talking about? You learn a lot about someone by listening into what they speak about. The famous quote, are they speaking about things? Are they speaking about people? Or are they speaking about ideas? What do people speak about around the Shabbos table? What do they talk about at the literal or proverbial water cooler? What someone speaks about, you learn a lot about them. So, V'yashivu lanu, you know what you should bring back? Not marzipan rugelach. Don't bring back a new yarmulke or t-shirt. Don't bring back a souvenir. V'yashivu lanu, davar. Find out what they talk about. Because if we need to know who they are and what they're all about, then listen in and tell us what they speak about. What got us into all this trouble? The Bechil Adoros. Think about it. What was the problem? That night, that fateful night, the Chet HaMeraglim. What was the problem that got us into this Bechil Adoros, that for the last thousands of years we've been crying in Gullus, Tisha B'Av, through the ages, tragedy and tribulation? What was the Chet HaMeraglim? What did they come back and do? They steal, they rape, they pillage? No, what'd they do? They misspoke. Through their language, they created a terribly negative reality. Through their language, through their speech, they destroyed. They came back and they reported. Through their dibur, they created a dover that continues to reverberate negatively until today. What's the tikkun, what's the repair? Eila hadvar masher diber. Eila hadvar masher diber. So this is a time of year, every time of year, but especially now, that we are hyper-focused on our dibur, how we use our power of speech. Are we magicians? Abra kedabra, abracadabra. Are we trying to, with these words, create positive outcome, compliments, lift spirits, create, build, or God forbid the opposite? We misuse and abuse the power of speech when we created division, sow division, machlokas, the sin of chinam that led to the destruction. So if that's what was the cause, then it's also the solution. V'dibartem, Ela dvar masher diber, v'yashivu lanu davar, to use that power of dibur to bring about the geula, to bring about the redemption. Pasuk Gimel, v'yibarim shanah b'ashri asar chodesh v'echad l'chodesh diber Moshe ben Yisrael. It was on the 40th year in the 11th month, the first of the month, Moshe spoke to the Jewish people. K'chol asher tivash Hashem oso aleihem, according to everything that Hashem commanded him to them. Which two words in that pasuk are extra? Which two words are extra? K'chol asher tziva Hashem, oso aleihem. Hashem commanded him to them. Seem to be extra words. My good friend Rabbi Mirzav pointed out a beautiful insight of the Menachem Tzion. We got him into the Menachem Tzion. Rabbi Menachem Tzion Zaks, you know, he's become one of my favorites. So he says on these words, Hamila Aleihem Nira L'chora K'miyuseras. This word Aleihem, read the pasuk again, let's read it together. From page 938 to 940. Diber Moshe al B'nei Yisrael, Moshe speaks to the Jewish people, K'chol asher tziva Hashem, as God commanded, Oso commanded him, Aleihem. What does Aleihem mean? What does Aleihem mean? To them. It's completely extra. What does it add? Efshel Farish Zem Machavin Lamashin Emar says from Menachem Tzion Zaks, maybe, it's a reference to what we saw earlier. Back in Sefer Shmos. By the Barashim of Moshe Velaron by Zavemel Ben Israel, God spoke to Moshe and Aaron and he commanded them regarding the Jewish people. Says Rashi, Tziva Aleihem. Why did God have to command Moshe and Aaron regarding the Jewish people? What was the command? Tziva Aleihem Lahanhigam Benachas Vilizbolosam. He said, these people, they're incorrigible, they're miserable, they're going to complain, they're going to criticize, they're going to be suspicious of you. We have that in our parsha too. I don't think we're going to get to it. But the people were suspicious. Moshe leaves late, he leaves early, he has no shalom bias, he's this, he's that. It's miserable. Leadership can be very, very, very lonely and at times painful. And Hashem warns Moshe at the very outset, while he was yet in smicha, Vaitzaveim, he said, you sure you want to go into this? Because if you do, lahanigam benachas vilizbolosam. The author of Kelm said, you see from here, the core critical criteria of a leader is patience. Patience. Sufferance. The ability to lizbol osam. They're going to make your life difficult. They're going to be miserable. They're going to complain. They're going to be unappreciative. They're going to be unfair. They're going to be suspicious. Yitachein efa shezeh masha pasuk mavlit vahi ba'arba'im shana. And that's what the pasuk is telling us. And it was in the 40th year, klomar, af shekvar avru arba'im shana me'azti v'ashem es Moshe lahanigiz b'nei Yisrael b'nachas v'lizbolosam. It's been 40 years. Moshe, it's your 40th anniversary in the Rabbanus. We're going to dedicate a Sefer Torah. We're going to name a wing after you. We're going to send you and the Rebbetzin on a vacation. Hari b'meshach shtanam elu b'nei Yisrael tzaru v'rubas Moshe b'garmelo tzarav. You know why we're going to do all of that? Because you have no hair, whatever hair you have left is gray, and it's because of this congregation, it's because of these people. Im kol zed diber Moshe el b'nei Yisrael kechol asher tziva Hashem oso aleihem. Moshe lo avad esavlanuso v'himshich l'anigas b'nei Yisrael b'nachas b'shalom uv'mishur bi'ava uv'mesirus. This extra word, says the Menachem Tzion, is teaching us that even though it's 40 years in, Moshe has not lost any patience. Moshe, like a loving father, remains completely patient and loving and doting on the people. Aleihem. Even though Bahi Ba'im Shana, even though it's the 40th year, Aleihem. He continues to have the patience. He continues to care. He continues to shepherd. He continues to be incredibly devoted to them. Perek Aleph, Pasuk Yud Beis. Turn the page, 942. We read this with the Eicha Trap. Eicha esa levadi tarchachem ma'asachem v'rivchem. Some suggest this is why we always read Parshas Dvarim before Tisha B'Av. Because here Moshe says, how can I alone carry your contentiousness and your burdens and your quarrels? Eicha esa levadi tarchachem ma'asachem v'rivchem. We spoke about this at length last year, 2 years ago, I don't remember. Based on this Rashi. I'm not going to repeat it. An amazing Reb Nachman of Breslov. I'm not going to repeat it. Got to go back and listen to it. Says Rashi, Melamed Shahayu Hikta Moshe Lotzeis. What happens? This is the suspicion. If Moshe got up early and left, Amru Ma'ro Ben Amru Lotzeis Shema Ena Shafai B'Soch Beso. Why is he leaving early? He has no Shalom Bias. He tries to stay out as long as he can. He works the longest hours. You know why Moshe works the longest hours? You know why Moshe can be found at the office all hours of the day? Because he has no peace and harmony in his home. Icher Lotzeis. You know what happens when he sleeps in? You know what happens when he leaves late? After a lovely brunch with his wife? Amrum Mara ben Amram Shalalatzis. Matam Swurim. Yoshiv Yotz Alechem Itzus Veroz Choshiv Machshavos. You know why he's late to work? Because he's sitting at that brunch with his wife, scheming and plotting and stealing from us. That lazy, good for nothing bum, get to work, Moshe. Moshe could lose. He was lost either way. He didn't have a fighting chance because they were so cynical. It was the cynics. That's what Moshe, Ich esa levadi, tarchachem masa'achem v'rivchem. I can't win. I can't win. I don't remember if I told you the story last time. This goes back years. that I once get a call from somebody who's upset. He says, Rabbi, I haven't been in shul for weeks. You didn't notice, nobody noticed, nobody called, nobody checked in on me. I said, I'm so sorry. I feel terrible. You know, we have so many minyanim on Shabbos morning, and it's such a seasonal community. People come and go. But I feel terrible, you're right, and I apologize, and please accept my apology, and I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. How are you? Where were you? Welcome back. So great to have you. I hang up the phone, I say to myself, who else haven't I seen in shul for a little while? I should probably make a phone call. So I thought of somebody I hadn't seen in a few weeks, and I call him. I say, so-and-so, I haven't seen you in a few weeks. Hope everything's okay. I'm just checking in. He says, and I quote, Rabbi, what, are you taking attendance now at shul? Tachachem, asachem, verivchem. Sometimes you can't win. You can't win either way. Whatever you do. Whatever you do. Rashi quotes the Chazal, it says this was apikorsis. Where's the apikorsis in this? Listen to last year's shir. Rav Elio Meir Bloch, the Rosh Hashiva of Tel, said, you see from here, ad kama ein maniga am yachol lotzis yidei habrios. Shekinu omeid b'fnei bikoro shol tzadim rabim v'tamid yimtzu bali machlokas shol yimtzu chen b'neim v'ivakro so v'ivakshu tainos l'vakro. You see that you can't win? Don't expect to win. You're not in it to win. You see from this pasuk and from Moshe Rabbeinu's reality that you're not in it to win. Why, Taka, did Moshe sometimes leave early and sometimes leave late? Moshe had an erratic schedule. It was a pretty consistent schedule in the Midbar. The mun fell, the water was available, and the protection of the clouds and the fire. Well, why did he have an erratic schedule? The truth is, Moshe was exact. Moshe was exact every single day. But if you're looking for problems and criticism, if you want him to be later, then you see him as leaving early and you conclude he has no shalom bias. If you wanted him to come early, then you perceive him as leaving late and you suspect him of scheming and plotting against you. It wasn't Moshe who had different schedules. It's when you're looking for the bad, when you're looking for the negative, you will interpret the reality to conform with what you're looking to see. What a great insight by the Telzer, no? These cynics and scoffers were not noticing about Moshe that Moshe was inconsistent. Moshe was the epitome of consistency. Ah, so how could some say he left early and some say he woke up late? The answer is because each of them were predisposed. Each of them wanted to arrive at their suspicious conclusion. So they interpreted the time based on what would support the suspicious reality that they thought they had. Pasuk Yudalev. Vata'anu osi vata'amru tova davar shadibarta la'asos. You answered me, and you said the thing that you have proposed to do is good. The thing that you propose to do is good. What's going on here? Says Rashi, "Vatanu asu." You answered me. Hayalacham lahashiv Rabbeinu Moshe mimi noa lumod mimcha umitamidcha lo mimcha shenitzta'arta aleha. Rashi here tells us what's going on. I couldn't bear the burden alone, so I needed to. I needed to delegate. I needed to recruit other leaders. And there would be a chain of command, a hierarchy, and I would only deal with the things that no one else could deal with because I couldn't bear it alone. And when that proposal was offered, what did you answer? What did you answer? You said, Tova davar shadibarta. That's good, that works. You could have a team of rabbis. You could delegate. You could have a robust staff. Absolutely. You answered, that works. That's good. But Rashi says something, that this is a criticism. Rashi says, Vatanu osi, you answered something negative. Why? What's going on? Because Moshe Rabbeinu Tobias Yisrael, Shekasher Higia, Kasher Higia, sorry, having some technological challenges here. There we go. Shkasher itziya lahem havu lachem anashim chachamim v'yiduim ha'yitzricham v'sarev v'lomar rak m'mcham ratzoneinu l'mo Torah. V'makom zeh iskimu v'amru lo tov adavar shedibarta la'asos. What's the criticism? What's the musar here? Moshe says, you know, when I told you this plan to delegate, you should have objected. You should have said, no, Moshe, we want you. We only want to learn from you. Tzarech lavin madua pashari l'moshe v'shiyutz l'kabo Torah makmenu. B'yichud tzarech lavin sh'moshe l'mochicham she'elein l'mod m'menu shekibu asa Torah ba'atzmo. The answer is because Moshe Rabbeinu heard directly from God. So since Moshe Rabbeinu heard it directly from God, it would have been the most authentic transmission. And the people should have objected and said, we don't want to hear it one person from another. We want the most direct route that there is. We want to hear it from as close to the source as possible. The Megid Yosef, Yosef Sirotskin. Moshe here says, the suggestion was made to delegate. Who does Moshe not mention? Who gave him the suggestion? Who came and said, Moshe, you're so overwhelmed. I'm worried about you. Moshe, my dear beloved son-in-law, you need a staff, you need a team, you need to delegate. I'm worried about you. Moshe gives it like, Havu lachem anashim chachamim. He never mentions Yisrael. Why not? Go back to Parshas Yisro and you find that of course this was Yisro's idea. So what happened to Omer B'Shem Omro? What happened to bringing redemption into the world by acknowledging the source? Says the Megid Yosef, V'nir levar api mashehevi Rashi. We can explain it based on the Sifri. Shemoshe neschavim ezelochich Yisrael al sonosu l'zrachek bimenu v'sheiskimu im arayon l'kvo achotosim b'neihem. For Moshe lo bokan lechtov koros am Yisrael, ella koparsha zui tochacha megul la am Yisrael. V'mkein zesh Yisrael agas harayon yat la Moshe uperachashub bekoros am Yisrael. Aval eim bezeh mishum tochacha lekla Yisrael. Rak hachilek she Moshe hevir es atzol Yisrael, v'im samuch yudeyim alav, b'mokam limchos, rak bezeh yish tochacha, v'ushayach leparsha zu. The whole purpose of this parsha is musar. There is no musar in saying that Yisrael is the one who conceived of the idea. Yisro gets the credit. He deserves the credit. And Yisro gets the credit back in Parshas Yisro. But it wouldn't have added to the Musar to invoke Yisro here. Since the whole purpose is to give Musar, therefore, Moshe only tells them the problem was, you accepted. When I said there would be a barrier in between, when I said I'm canceling the shiur, we're moving to Zoom, you should have said, what? No way. Not less shiurim, we want more. Not online, we want in person. Not through someone else, we want you. And their failure to do that showed a casualness on their part, a willingness to compromise on their part. And that's what Moshe is saying. The emphasis of the reason to repeat the story is not because Yisro originated, but rather to give the Musar, and that is why he leaves it out. Pasuk Chav Beis, page 944. We're turning pages, don't get whiplash. Rei nasan Hashem lokecha levanachas arz alei reish kasher diber Hashem lokecha v'sach alach al tira v'al techas. But to gravun elai kuchem atomru nishlachan Hashem lefaneinu. Now we get to the Meraglim. Moshe is making his way through their short transition until that point, and again, he is giving a good Musar Vad. But to Gravun Elai Kochem, you approached me, Vatamnu, and you said, Nishlachan Hashem Lefaneinu, let's send some people. V'yachbru lanu as ha'aretz, and we'll go investigate the land. V'yashivu asanu davar, we talked about this earlier, the Rashi and the Maharal, as ha'derach ha'shana leba, how we should go up and ascend, v'yisa harim ha'shanavu aleyan, and the cities that we have to come upon them. Says, V'yachezka Levenstein. Says the following. Mavur b'psukim elu shekol sibur ha-meraglim ha-yibiyosim krov ha-mismuchim l'aritz Yisrael. U'mekevet shenichshalu v'chidim meraglim v'garma l'chol ha'am l'vkaz balay lahu, nasu kol ha-klav l'nichtsu l'aritz Yisrael ha-yitzrichan l'lechaz arba m'sharba midbar. Hari yitachein. Listen to this powerful message. Says Rav Yechezko. Sha'adum yaso kol yama b'torah u'mitzvos u'masim tovim v'yukarav ma'od l'zchus b'nachlis olam haba v'likras ha-sof Yitain liyetzahara petach likashoba vera achas, the yovad V'moyadav es kol ha'olam shebala shelo. Says Rav Yecheskel, you know what part of the lesson of the story is here? A person could be approaching the finish line. You could work your entire life. You could earn and secure a reputation. You could try to achieve certain goals. And yet, you could throw it all away at the end. One bad decision, one act of poor judgment, one moment of letting down your guard, one giving in to your animal instinct, and you can lose it all in a moment. Yetzahara lo yotze l'chofesh la'olam. The Yetzahara never takes a vacation. The Yetzahara doesn't retire. The Yetzahara doesn't take a break. The Yetzahara is never on vacation. So here the Jewish people are at the finish line, the end of life. They're almost there. Here the Jewish people are about to realize the dream. Here the Jewish people have come so far, and yet, in that fateful moment, when they came back and they could have reported positively or negatively, they could have used that power of speech to build and to elevate, instead they used it to undermine and to destroy. And because they did, they compromised the entire mission. Wow. Just when you let your guard down, just when you think you're done, just when you think you've arrived, you ever see a video of somebody in the marathon in the race and right before the finish line? You ever see in football the guy who's celebrating at the 1 yard line, he tries to moonwalk into the end zone, and just at that second an opposing player knocks the ball out of his hands, he fumbles, he falls, and he looks like an absolute fool. We actually have a term for this. I like to use this term. We say, don't spike the football before you're in the end zone. You ever hear that term? Don't spike the football before you're in the end zone. Klal Yisrael were spiking the football, and they fumbled at the 1 yard line. And the lesson for us, what Moshe was telling them, you were at the 1 yard line. We could have all been in Israel. Mashiach would have come, could have built the Beis HaMikdash, it would have been everlasting. Moshe himself would have escorted them in. Don't prematurely celebrate. Don't fumble at the 1 yard line. Don't let down your guard. Don't feel you've arrived. Doesn't matter what age, what stage of life. Doesn't matter what time in your career. The Yetzirah never rests. The Yetzirah never takes a break. The Yetzirah is never, ever done. And therefore, don't ever let up. Don't ever let up. One more thought. We'll end with this. We have more, as always. But we'll end with this. We have a levaya of a very special and holy woman, one of the early pillars and founders of our community, momentarily this morning. Mrs. Ijack. Perak Aleph Pasuk Chav Gimel. We'll end with this. And you found favor in my eyes, and we found 12 spies, and they went and they headed out. Moshe testifies, Shalorak Shalois Nagedit, not just that he didn't oppose their plan, but Vayitav Be'enai HaDavar. The Ramban explains, the beginning of Parsha Shlach, that Moshe sent people to see the land, not only to see the land, but how to conquer it. And from that goal, the people were very happy. So, where's the Chet HaMeraglim? What did they do that was so wrong? If Moshe was happy, Vayitav Be'enai, if he was satisfied and happy, if he bought in, and if he endorsed it, where'd they go wrong? So listen to what the Altar of Kelm says. Iker Chet Haisa, Pizizus Mitzad Yisrael. It says, Vatikrevun Elai Kolchem, you all approached me. And Rashi says one word. Vatikrevun Elai Kolchem, Bi'ir Buvia, Yiladim Dochafim Es Hazkenim. Shoving and pushing. Everybody was Bi'ir Buvia. There was chaos and commotion. You wanted this so bad. Moshe had a plan. Moshe had a goal from the spies, but the people didn't buy it. They didn't believe it. They panicked. There was hysteria. There was pushing and there was shoving. And that was the Chet HaEgel. The Chet HaEgel is hysteria and panic. A failure of faith. To not believe in a leader that there is a plan and there is a mission. Irbuvia. There was hysterica. There was panic. They had lost their menuchas hanefesh. A yid, a Jew, is always meant to live with menuchas hanefesh. A sense of calm. To know, it's going to be okay. Here's what we have to do. The moment there is irbuvia, someone just sent me a video yesterday I saw of a small plane where a pilot passed out. So a passenger who'd never flown before had to call the tower that guided him into landing the plane. And while you listened to the voice from the cockpit, it showed the flight pattern. The plane was zigzagging. If you were just looking at it, you'd think you don't know what. And this person who'd never flown a plane, while the person walked him through it, landed the plane safely. He saw the zigzag till he finally came in and landed safely. The most remarkable part to me of this little video that was sent was the passenger was completely calm. What do I do next? What do I do now? How do I do this? What do I look at? Am I doing okay? He wasn't screaming, he wasn't panting, he wasn't out of breath, he wasn't hyperventilating. Menuchas ha-nefesh. If a person really has emunah and believes in God, then they remain calm at all times. Keep calm and carry on because God's in charge. But when you act be'irbuvia, when you act with panic and with hysteria, when you shove and when you push, when you panic, it is a failure of faith. You don't believe it will be okay. You're not confident that there is a plan and that Hashem is watching our back. That was the Chet HaMeraglim. The Chet HaMeraglim was not asking for the Meraglim. The Chet HaMeraglim maybe was not even the report of the Meraglim. The Chet HaMeraglim was the response to the Meraglim. The Irbuvia, the panic and the chaos, the failure and the breakdown of faith in Hashem. And that is what we continue to suffer from Ad Hayom Hazeh until today. Please remember, we're on break for a few weeks. No Parsha class. You could listen to old years. You could listen to other people's Parsha class. So until we resume, until next time, stay happy, stay healthy, and stay holy.